Sure, other stations promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
The morning show that's on your side. But then again, so is appendicitis.
Get ready for the most popular morning show anywhere on the internet. You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Mia right here on LA Talk Radio. If you'd like to take part in the show today, give us a call at 323-203-0815. And now your program hosts, Sam and Mia.
Good morning and welcome to Tuesday, January 21st, and we're here.
A lovely Tuesday it is, yeah. I might add.
Everybody has allergies all over the place.
Yes.
Have you been sneezing a lot?
And dry skin.
Yeah, I've been sneezing a lot, dry skin. We're like complaining every day, everybody here in LA, you know, because we have an unusual Indian summer or something, whatever you might call it.
You know? I don't know what this would be called because it's, you know, in the middle of winter.
It is in the middle of winter. I think that's what they call it.
We've got like the best weather ever.
Yeah.
So, but what's so weird is that it gets really chilly at night, though.
It does.
It gets so hot during the day, and it gets so cold at night.
Like, I know. You don't know what to wear. You know, once the sun's down, that's it. You know, it gets really chilly.
I know.
But half the country is under snow, so we're okay.
I know. That's very true.
Yeah.
I'm so thankful.
It's really small problems to just have to scratch every once in a while.
It's just, I feel so bad every time I, like, mention it and be like, oh, yeah, you know, gosh, it's just so hot today. My mom's like, don't. Don't even.
Yeah, don't start. Huh?
Don't even rub it in. Like, we're like below zero and snowing again. I'm like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean that. I take it back. You didn't hear me say that.
So, did you get your battery fixed in your car? I mean, yesterday you had problems and stuff.
Yeah.
And it was funny because, you know, we were getting ready to call. You couldn't start your car. So I couldn't.
Yeah. And that's why I'm glad, like, I called after you before you got in your car, because we were leaving and I'm like, oh man, like, my car wouldn't start this morning, we'll see what happens.
Right.
So sure enough, I say bye to you, you walk the opposite way to your car, I get in my car, I go to start it, and nothing. It's just like flickering. I'm
and
like,
you had a feeling it wouldn't
no.
start because it didn't start that morning either.
Yeah, I was having issues with it. So I'm like, Sam, wait, come back. Do you have jumper cables? I need help.
So needless to say, I didn't have any cables.
No.
And then you approach this other guy in a car, in a van, and he didn't have any either. But the thing is, thank goodness he was there, because he's the one that brought our
attention. He gave us some very good advice.
He gave us good advice.
Yes, he was like, you know, if the battery is really, like, corroded,
right,
you know, try to get rid of some of that corrosion, you know,
right,
on the battery.
That's what
you did. You took your key and you're just kind of like,
exactly,
digging
it's all chalky stuff in that, and you remove it, and your car started. Lo and behold, you know,
it did. Yeah,
that was funny.
Like, wow. See, I took it straight to my car guys, like right after. You know, the guys over at Phoenix. I just got to give them a shout out. They're right near Fairfax and Beverly. And they're called Phoenix. They're amazing. They had this spray, and they literally just sprayed it, and it, like, foamed up and, like, fizzled around the battery.
Uh-huh.
And then he, like, wiped it off, and all that corrosion was gone.
It was like clean, ate
all of that away, and it was, like, good as new. It started right up,
really?
No problem.
So you don't even need a battery or anything.
Right. No, he's like, unless it's still, you know, giving you more issues. And, and also, too, because I didn't use it for so long. I was out of town for a while.
Right.
So they're like, yeah, also that happens if your car is sitting for so long. It's not used to being driven very much, you know, things like that, you know, will happen and it'll cause complications. But it's like, yeah, it should be fine now. Just kind of take it easy for a while. And
that's true. You know,
I mean,
look, if we had popped up your hood before we talked to the guy, I would have looked and probably would have done the same thing. But I wasn't even at a point where I was going to do that. I was just going to call a tow truck or something, you know, to come and give us a jump.
Yeah, no, I will try like all options until until I need a tow truck.
But you don't really need the tow truck. You just need someone to start you up, you know.
Jumper cables, yeah.
Right, exactly. So, but this guy definitely guided us towards the right solution.
Yes,
so,
yes. Thank you, random guy parked outside of LA Talk Radio.
Yeah. When you have a used car, then you get more familiar with your car than when it's new, you know, because, I mean, I've got like a 2-year-old car, and I never even popped the hood once, you know, because there's no need to, you know, you just take it to the shop, you do the service, and that's it. So, I remember I used to know a lot more about cars when I was a teenager and stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. I had this old Buick, this huge Buick, and I would have to fix it every other day. You
know? Fancy.
Yeah.
Fancy sound.
It's funny. Can you see a 16-year-old driving this huge, like a Cadillac?
It's hilarious.
It was funny. It was funny. But those were the days, you know. I mean, my friends loved the car. We could fit like 6-7 people in there, you know. So that was funny.
Yeah. No, so, I'm about to get like a little 2-seater or something.
Yeah.
And the car is already practically a 2-seater. The back seat is so microscopically small.
Right. Exactly. With mine too, you know. It's not meant for adults to sit in.
Right. Yeah. No. Especially, no, not the back seat. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, my first car was a big black Dodge Durango.
Really?
That thing was a beast, man. Yeah. I loved that thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's still in Chicago. It's still there. I use it to tow the boat. You know, in and out of
That's a big car, too.
Water, but it was a huge car. Right. I loved it. But out here, I'm like, no, I need like a super cute convertible so I can look awesome in Los Angeles. So I got my car. But it's like, it's an 01, you know, it's definitely older. And it's been on my mind, you know, to get a new vehicle sometime in the near future.
Yeah, in LA, you need to, you know. I mean, even if it's not a fancy car or anything, but you don't want something that breaks down, you know.
Yeah, no, no. Oh, no, it's going to have to be a fancy car, my next car.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, excuse
I've had my eye on a yellow convertible Lotus Elise since I can remember. I've been saving up for that specific car for a very, very long time. I mean, granted, most of that savings ended up, you know, for this car to like fix it, going in the shop, getting, you know, new batteries and new, you know, belts and such. But yeah, oh well. What are you going to do, right?
Yeah,
there?
Exactly. One day you'll find the Lotus in your front, in your driveway.
Although that would be nice. I mean, kind of like I'm more along the lines of like, it's kind of like a personal goal. Like it's sort of like the, I made it sort of thing. You know, like once I can like buy myself that Lotus, I'm like, like it's like a self achievement goal.
Right.
Although like I wouldn't turn it down if, you know, anybody out there would love to just drop a Lotus in my driveway. I would not turn it down.
Yeah, I'm sure you could find a couple of people who would do that for you.
You know, actually what's funny is that I actually have. Straight up, I won't buy you a Lotus. So I said, you can find a used one for about, I don't know, about like 20 or so, like maybe a little bit more than that.
Lotus for $20,000?
Yes. So it's actually quite achievable.
I don't know what Lotus you were looking at, but...
The Elise. You know? The Elise. It's not like the Evora S, although okay, I would so love like the Evora S, but yes, it's super small. It's basically like a go-kart.
What does it call? Oh, but yeah, so I know cute. Those. Okay.
Yeah, all Google right, it. Look those. It up, or I can pull
so
it
So how much
iPad.
Do they cost new? Do you know?
New?
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't even. Yeah. I wouldn't even begin to start looking there because I was looking at the Evora S because it's a little bit like bigger, you know. But it's newer and it's way more expensive, and it's just not. It just doesn't have the style that the Elise does. There's just something so cute about it. I'm obsessed, absolutely obsessed.
Okay, all
but
right.
Yeah, that's where my head's at.
Yeah, make a wish list, you know.
Yep, that and Christian Louboutins, the shoes with the red bottoms, you know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, those are like...
And how much do those cost?
Oh, God. A lot.
Really?
It's like, ridiculous. Whoa. Ridiculous expensive shoes.
I know. I don't get women with all this stuff. I mean, you're going to walk on those soles. They won't be red for much longer.
Yeah,
and,
but
I mean,
there's
shoes,
like,
you know.
There's tricks and
then,
know.
And
believe
then
me,
with those
Googled.
Fancy bags and stuff, you know. I mean, come on.
Like
you know?
This thing. This looks brand new. I've had this thing for years.
Yeah.
and it still looks Louis like new.
Vuitton.
Like, yes, like I wish it would like wear down a little bit, you know? Like I want it to, you know, wear out. Like it I like that used. Like grubby look.
Yeah.
But it still looks new. I'm like, dang it. Yeah. Look old already, would you?
In you LA, know, every other woman has a Louis Vuitton, you know? It's just good, you have to have
good
it.
Good quality stuff though, cuz it's something you wear every day.
Right.
Like, but it's not like a dress I'm going to wear for one evening that costs, you know, $1,000 or something. Yeah. It's, yeah. you know,
But it's still about, you know, making an impression and stuff on people, impressing people and stuff, you know, because otherwise, I mean, you know, it does the function of a $50 bag or a $100 bag. Mm-hmm. But then again, you can tell me, yeah, there's Mercedes and then there's Lamborghinis and then there's Toyotas, you know. So they both get you there, right?
Yeah, my favorite. When guys compare girls, they'll be like, there's a Honda and then there's a Ferrari.
Right.
Like, oh, thanks. That's nice. Yeah,
I know. There's also marriage material and not marriage material.
Yeah. So, yeah.
You have to figure out which one you're at, you know.
I was just meaning like number status, like hotness level, yeah. like a 10 and a 2, you know, Honda.
No, Ferrari. I know.
But yeah, yeah, okay.
Meant, yeah.
Okay. Thankfully, I was the Honda in that, or the Ferrari. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Oh
my when God. Somebody said, "Oh, you're the Ferrari," she's the Honda. I'm like, "Oh, thank you." Oh my gosh! Wow. Funny okay. stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. You know, I'm right. the Honda. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, there you go. No, you're not a Honda fish by any stretch.
Thanks.
All right. Well, we have a special guest in the studio. Welcome to the show. We have Rod Harrell in the sitting right here with us patiently. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Of course. And so how did you find out about our show?
Actually, Mia is a pretty big proponent of the show. And I hear about it through, you know, one thing about being a publicist in the town, you hear and you have to hear about everything that goes on in the town.
Really? Well, that's cool. So you've heard about us.
Oh, absolutely.
Wow. We've
made
the big time, you see. After 6 years, we might as well, you know, be known. But this is cool. So, I mean, obviously you're big in the business. I mean, I'm looking at Twitter. You got 92,000 followers. I mean, that's like pretty big deal.
Yeah, it's kind of odd since I'm not supposed to be the famous one.
Right.
I'm supposed to be the background guy who's making somebody else famous.
Right. Mm-hmm.
However, I've had some very famous clients.
I see.
So,
okay.
You know, and people in this town, you know, the one thing they want is they want to get somewhere.
That's true, yeah. So tell us what kind of a business you have.
Well, I actually have several businesses.
Okay.
They're all under RLH Talent, but I have a publicist PR company, and I also have a talent management company. I also get distribution for feature films and television shows. I'm also a executive director of feature films and TV shows.
Wow. So you're well involved in the entertainment industry, in the film industry more?
Film is a big one. Right. Also in music as well.
Oh, yeah. So you have musical clients as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
Got it all.
In this town, you know, that's the thing that people always come to me, and I have no problem giving free advice.
Right.
Because you never know who your client might be next.
Right.
And they always ask the same thing. How do I get into this business? How do I get that feature film? I said, well, yeah, there's a lot that you need to do, but it's actually simple. You know, in this business, you are a business and you're the product of that business.
Yes, and some people don't realize that, right?
Right.
I mean, because, you know, I mean, so many people come into this town to make it in entertainment and stuff, and they come from small towns and they don't understand what goes on here, you know? So it's like you come here naive and you go, oh, you know, I'll be the next Tom Cruise or something. You know?
Right, right. Well, yeah. You know, I get a lot, especially on the female end.
Yeah.
They're the prettiest girl in their town.
Right.
Yeah. Right?
They're the homecoming queen.
And they're very small. Town.
Right. They had guys lining up around the corner from whatever they were from to ask them out on a date. So they figure when they get here, they're going to have the same results. And unfortunately, And fortunately for all of us who live in L.A., there's about 10 million others that look just like them.
Exactly. And this is funny because we mentioned it before on the show once, you know, that they do, they are like the most beautiful in their town. And they come here and they're like nobody.
And you know, it's a real hit to somebody's ego and their impression on life.
That's true.
However, if they actually have intelligence, then they'll be able to figure out that they need to actually approach this as a business.
Right.
Once they get it into their mind, one, they don't get their feelings hurt when they get turned down.
Right. And I guess that goes with trial and error. In the beginning, they'll realize that, hey, there's going to be disappointment and stuff, but it's probably pretty devastating in the beginning for them, you know.
Yeah. There's some that really just, they can't take it, and you see them packing their bags within 3 months.
Really? That's
Oh, absolutely.
That's what I've always said, too. I'm like, that's kind of like the cutoff, you know, the 3 months. It's like, you're either going to make it out here a little longer, or you're going to go home.
Yeah. There's always something common with threes. Yeah. There's 3 days, 3 months, and 3 years. If you last past 3 years, you're here.
Really?
Woo-hoo, I'm 4 years. Yes, I'm here. I've heard it from the professional.
Yeah. There you
I'm
go.
Here.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, but Mia still stands out in L.A. too, right? I mean, among L.A.
Well,
women,
yeah,
she's
she also has
beautiful.
A very unique voice too, by the way.
Right?
Yeah,
yeah.
It's a little extra scratchy today.
But people love your voice on the radio.
But people, yeah, this is funny. People like it. You know, like, oh, do you change your voice on the radio? Like, I get that question all the time. I'm like, nope. The same like awkward squeaky voice you hear right now is the one I use on the radio. What you hear is what you get.
Right, and that's part of marketing, right? And marketing is basically finding something that is unique about your product that is not like every single other one on the market.
Right.
Right? And she has a unique voice.
Right.
You know, she's beautiful, and that's great.
Right.
But there's
but
a lot
she's
of beautiful
work
out
hard.
There.
Exactly. She's got to work hard.
Right? You go to Runyon Canyon, there's 80 models running up and down that hill.
Right.
Right?
Oh, yeah. And they're
and
all
you
in
look
sports
at them
bras
like,
with six packs.
Right. Exactly. Right? And you're thinking to yourself, and they're running up the hill, and you're thinking, geez, is it really that hard? You know, they're already eating one piece of celery a month. You know? Do they really need extra workout? But yeah, and that's what everybody's fighting for. I tell this to people all the time. When they come from other states or even other countries, LA has a higher standard for everything. And this isn't just the entertainment business. This is every business in LA. They have a higher standard of hiring. And that's exactly what you're doing when you're auditioning. You're being hired, or you're doing an interview to be hired.
Right. Mm-hmm. Is that because there's a lot of talent out there and stuff? And so they figure we have a lot to choose from. We might as well choose the better ones.
Absolutely. Well, you know, when you look at it again as a business, like one of the feature film projects that I have, The Land of No Return, when we look at who we're going to attach to the project to get funding and distribution, we look at who is going to add to the marketability of the film.
Right.
Right? So we look at the top five. That's what you always look at as the exec, right? I look at the top five and say, okay, look at their stats for what they've brought in money-wise.
Right.
And then I attach those top five. I don't care if they're a great talent.
Right.
I really don't. And the key is, that's why you have retakes, right?
Right.
The directors are great. The editors are great. They'll make it look good.
Right.
They really do. They do a great job. If you
that's
really
true.
See the on-set side of how many hours of filming you do versus what you see on the TV or in the theater, you know, there's a lot that has to be redone, and it has to be, you know, looked at again, like, okay, that just doesn't work at all. And they even have writers on set that, you know, make up for the script.
Wow.
You know, again, it's all about that end product, and it's a business. And every single film or television show is a product or a business in itself.
Right. And I think it's hard for the creative people to wrap their mind around it, you know, because they don't come from a business background. They don't understand this, you know, so they're more like creative. And like you said, you know, I mean, if they would think if they have the better talent or the better looks and stuff, they're going to for sure make it.
Right, right.
But it doesn't work that way.
Yeah, I hear that all the time when people pitch projects to me. They say the same thing every time. It's like they've read it somewhere, and they just regurgitate the same words. You're going to love this project. It's the best thing since sliced bread. You know, and I'm like, okay, first of all, I'm not going to love the project. Okay, I'm not sleeping with the project. I'm not marrying the project. There's no love involved, okay? If it's going to pay off, well, then sure. I will like it.
Yeah.
but there will not be any love involved. Right. It's just business, and that's it. And everyone that knows me knows I am all about business.
You're all about business.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't care otherwise.
Right.
I don't care what your feelings are on the subject.
But that's
at
how
all.
You become successful, you know, at least financially successful.
Right.
Yeah.
I come from being a very poor family.
Really?
I grew up in Fresno, California, you know, the place that people make fun of in the movies right. and TV, right? I was a cop there.
Uh-huh.
I grew up in a horrible, horrible neighborhood
really?
Where it was very violent. You know, I've been shot, I've been stabbed, I've been ran over, thrown through windows.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I'm probably one of the toughest guys you actually will ever
meet.
Wow.
And I grew up knowing that I wanted to get the heck out of that place.
Right.
Right? Because I knew that this is not normal.
Yeah.
This is not a normal way to live.
Right.
To live in violent poor town.
Right.
Not anything against my family who still lives there in Fresno. But I knew that it's not something I wanted to do.
Right. And you had quite an incentive to leave, obviously.
Yeah. You know, gunshots, you know. It's one thing to, you know, live in the ghetto and hear gunshots. It's another thing to have them whizzing by you or hitting you.
That's true, yeah.
Technicalities.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's insane.
So you were raised in a poor family, relatively poor family?
To give you a reference, let's see, macaroni and cheese was a delicacy.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. And I started working full-time when I was 11 years old.
Really?
Absolutely.
Wow.
I ended up paying rent for the family. I've to give you an idea, I've had 60 jobs.
Oh, my God.
To date.
Wow.
60.
Wow.
And I'm not that old.
No, you don't seem
like
you're
that
old.
I may look it, but I'm not that old. I almost always had at least a couple of jobs, full-time jobs, at the same time.
Wow, that's amazing. You see, and that's why it's toughened you up, I think, you know, for life. It's like, you know, you look at kids today and like, you know, at 20, 24, they're not doing anything with their lives, you know.
Right. I get a lot of people that are part of that, I hate to say it, the entitlement generation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of my friends back home, they're still all living with their parents.
Yeah. And, like, and they're very good at that entitlement, you know. I mean, they'll make you feel guilty about anything, you know.
Right. Yeah, there's a guilt trip associated.
Yeah.
And again, because as most people know me, I'm like a robot, I have no guilt.
Wow, that's whatsoever. An accomplishment.
Yeah, it is. I think so. Females in my life, not so much.
Yeah.
There's so many out there that come to me and they, what do I do? You know, I can't pay my bills. I'm like, well, why aren't you working?
Right.
I know I've got like 5 jobs. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
There used to be a skit on In Living Color, or it was Mad TV, one of those. And they had like these Jamaicans that were always talking about, oh, I've got 12 jobs. You're lazy, man. And I always think about that. And I'm like, that's right. You're lazy. What are you waiting on?
Yeah,
get to work.
Exactly.
I dug ditches. I picked peaches. I was out in the grape vineyards. Whatever it took.
Yeah, whatever it takes. Wow. That's right, you know. And some people don't realize that. And these young kids, it's like, oh, I don't want to make minimum wage. I know this. But you got to start somewhere, you know. Mm-hmm. If you're going to wait till you're 25 to start working and then start at minimum wage, yeah, you're behind everybody, you know.
Right. If you're 50 years old and this is the key. There's a lot of age factors these days. If you're 50 years old and you've lost your job because that job just doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
Then what are you doing? You should be training on something that does exist.
Right.
That's true.
Or even going back to school or something.
Yeah,
you
got
to
adapt.
A lot of people after their jobs were
exactly.
gone and go back to school.
Exactly. I go to the Marine Corps way.
Uh-huh.
Improvise, adapt, overcome.
Right.
I say it all the time. In fact, I post it all the time on my Facebook page. And I'm like, you guys got to really start adapting here.
Right.
Right? If you know that there's huge amount of jobs in the computer industry.
That's where you go, right?
Why aren't you working?
Right.
Because what I tell my clients is you must pay your bills.
Yeah.
If you are not paying your bills, you're not going to be confident for that audition.
That's true.
And you're going to be stressed out thinking this job has to come off or you're not going to be able to pay your bills.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you can't just get up and announce one day, hey, I'm an actor or something and stop working, right? It doesn't work that way.
Although so many do.
I know.
And they think that they're just. Yeah, right. And the thing is, I've been on the other side of the camera. I've done acting, God knows why. because I don't like being on the other side of a camera. I don't like my picture taken or anything, but I've been in feature films and TV shows, and I just happened to be on set.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't because I was there to do that job. It's just people don't even show up to work. They're flaky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like, there's not jobs. You're fighting for all these jobs, and then people still don't show up for work.
Right.
I'm like, mm-hmm. And then he said, hey, you look like a cop. I'm like, yeah, it's not a stretch. Yeah. They say, oh, you look like you're in the military. Yeah. And again, not a stretch. Yeah. I think I can play that role. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But again, you know, I would do it as a favor, and then I'd end up being, you know, the detective on the TV series.
Yeah.
I'm like, I had some friend of mine who submitted me one time for a model job. And I'm like, you did what?
Oh. Like,
the cop sniper you're going to have as a model. Really? I'm thinking no. And at the time, I was a IT systems engineer. As computers, uh-huh. Again, jobs.
Right.
And somebody called me up and they said, hey, you've won the national ad campaign for this footwear. I'm like, first of all, I'm thinking, all right, which one of my old cop friends put them up to this one? Come yeah. on. So I said, give me your number. I'm going to call you back. Right. Mm-hmm. So I call him back and it was true. And I'm like, okay, you do realize my size shoe is 14, right? This is not normal for footwear.
Oh,
right. And they went, oh, yeah, no, you still won. And then I had to do the camera thing. And again, this is where models, you know, I started to really appreciate models.
Thank you.
Because you have to stand and be in such awkward poses for hours and hours on
yep.
end. And it was a week-long shoot.
Oh, wow.
It was just painful. And again, they made me do a mani and a pedi.
Oh, God.
And first time I actually knew what the heck that was. I always thought there was some guys out there named
yeah,
mani
like two
and
guys.
Pedi. I had no idea what it was. And I'm like, you want to do what with my hands and feet?
Oh, God.
Yeah, so.
You picked just the right person.
Yeah, again, the sniper. You're going to have me do that?
So
I don't think so.
Yeah. So this is interesting. So you've been through a lot in your life. How did you end up being a cop?
Well, actually, most of the people that knew me growing up said the same thing, like, you're a cop? That
really?
Just doesn't work.
Really?
Something just flipped. I was a mechanic at the time when I was 19, and I always wanted to do the, you know, the Blue Knight. For those of us who are that old, there was an old television show called The Blue Knight, and he was really the cop on the beat. He was always helping people out. He was, you know, he's the superhero,
yeah,
right? Without
right.
special powers,
right?
Right? He helped people, and I really liked that. I liked being the hero. And I taught self-defense for years and years and years, and I liked that kind of role. And
right.
I said, you know, maybe I'll just apply to the academy, and we'll see what happens. You know, like, you know, if it doesn't happen, okay, that'll answer it for me.
Right.
And I got in. I went, oh, no. What am I going to do now?
Yeah.
And I started that role in life and really, really liked it, although it really pays horribly.
It does, huh?
Not in L.A. It was in Fresno.
Okay.
And that was pretty rough. But it was a great job, but I couldn't continue it because, again, I kept getting shot and stabbed. And,
wow.
Yeah, I just ended that career shortly. But then I had to find out what to do next.
Yeah.
Right? Each job was another step, and that's the key to most things in life. You can't sit there and dwell on things in your past saying, yeah, I wish I could have done that, or I wish that should have gone farther, or whatever. These are all just steps to get to where you need to go.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly. And that's what I found out also, like with this radio station that I started, it was sort of like a culmination of all the skills I've acquired over the years in different businesses or jobs that I had, you know.
Right.
So I totally agree with you, you know, and that's why you got to embrace everything that you do, because it is just a step mm-hmm. forward to where you want to get.
Right, right.
You know?
Yeah, and that led me to all those different steps, being an IT engineer, being, you know, a cop, being a mechanic, being a surgery tech. The myriad of careers that I've had in my past all helped to get me to where I am today.
Right.
Wow.
Being an IT engineer, that's what got me to be a publicist. And one of my most famous clients, George Marciano, the founder of Guess Clothing.
Right.
The reason why I started there is he needed somebody to do a website for him.
Oh, wow.
Called me over to his mansion. I met with him in this huge, long hallway at one of his rooms. And he he really liked what I said. And, you know, there's a funny story with that. He kept saying, well, how much will you charge? And I said, well, I looked around, about $1,500 it's about the average of the price for what you want. And he goes, well, how about $10,000? Oh, God. And I said, wait, I thought, did I say the wrong number? Because I'm thinking, you know, I'm tired. Yeah, I don't know. And I said, no, $1,500. And he says, well, no, how about $10,000? And right. I said, okay, maybe this is a test,
yeah.
Right? You know, he's a rich guy. He probably doesn't, you know. He,
played
he's
with to, your mind.
Right? He's either messing with me or he's seeing if I'm going to be one of those people that try to rip people off. And yeah. Not that that happens in this town. And so I said, well, it'll be $1,500. He said, okay, well, you do it after your regular job. You come after there and then you can work on it. And I'll give you your check tomorrow. I said, all right.
Wow.
So I came to the job. And, of course, I was raised in a certain way, very religious Christian background, and you know, very moral, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And there's certain things you don't do, right? You don't look at the check, right? So he hands me a check. I put it in my pocket. I go on my work, and then I leave for the day. Of course, the very next block, I'd pull over and I'd pull out the check and I'd take a look, right? And I took a look, and it was $10,000. I went, holy moly!
Wow,
he wasn't kidding.
Yeah.
And wow. Then a week later, I became the manager of all of his staff.
Oh, cool. So he really liked you. He believed in
you.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. And a week later after that, he decided he wanted to run for governor of California.
Really?
And then he made me his campaign manager.
Wow. So did he actually run?
Yes.
Really?
Absolutely.
What year?
Yeah, he was on the ballot. It was the one right after Schwarzenegger.
Oh, so really? So it's recent.
Yeah, absolutely. 2009, oh, wow. I believe. Yeah.
I see.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So by that job, I all of a sudden started getting him interviews in radio and television and all around the world. And it was like 3 or 4 interviews every single week.
Wow.
And most of the time, though, I had to do the talking because he's actually a recluse. He doesn't like to talk.
Oh.
He doesn't do speaking engagements. He doesn't, you know, like, wait a second, you're going to run for governor. And then he also, in private, he said, I don't want to move to Sacramento, George. You kind of have to live there as governor.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there was a lot of odd things.
That's funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people have been running for governor in California. I mean, crazy, you know?
It takes a lot of money, I can guarantee you that.
Yeah, I know.
Well, he had a lot of money, so that kind of worked out.
So you sort of like got thrust into this publicity thing, right? Because he hadn't done it before.
Right. And that was the key, is I started having conversations with, you know, Danny DeVito and Dustin Hoffman and John Voight, and just by association, like I handled the sale of his business jet to Steven Spielberg.
Oh, wow. Right?
Which was an odd existence where I hand him over he hands me a check for $50 million. And it was a personal check. And I went, Mr. Spielberg, you do realize that's an odd thing to hand somebody, right? It's a personal check for $50 million. It's just not right. I don't, like this, you know, I'm the guy who, you know, grew up, you know, picking grapes in, you know, the Central Valley, and you're handing me a $50 million. I'm thinking, where do I run?
Yeah.
It's
like you keep it.
Yeah. But, you know, by that association of all that press and all those interviews and being interviewed on, you know, Larry King and Sean Hannity, Larry Elder and all these magazines around the world and news and so on, all of a sudden I became his publicist. And then everybody knew me as a publicist.
Amazing.
Right. And because of that association, I started all the other businesses as well, because I had a reputation in town, one that I'm business first. I don't care if you love anything. And it has to make a serious profit.
Wow.
So, you know, and then I started getting, you know, publishers of books and authors, musicians, actors, writers, directors, all the above. Another book that I just got, and here's a nice plug.
Uh-huh.
Which would be Introspection by Regina McKinney.
Uh-huh.
That one just signed her up the other day. It's going to be a great book. It's going to be of 10 books.
Really?
So, oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, she's
how many of them has she written yet?
Quite a few.
Really?
Four of them, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, the audio version is just about to be released as well.
Amazing. So you represent authors as well?
Absolutely.
So the whole gamut, pretty much.
If there's money in it, absolutely.
Yeah, there you go. You
see? As long as it's legal. I don't yeah. I don't go against the law. Just to state that on record. It's not going to happen.
No, but you're focused. I mean, you're focused on business and profit and stuff, and that's the way it should be. You know, I mean, a lot of people go into business just because they like what they do or something, or they want to create something new, but they don't think of the business perspective of it.
Right, you know? Right. And if they did, and that's the key, if they did, they would realize there's things that go into it that they could model themselves after so that they would be hired. That their stuff does get marketed well, that they're, you know, that they start getting interviews, that they start getting auditions, that they start selling their product.
Right.
And as long as they focus on the business aspect, it goes a lot faster.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. So now you mentioned some other projects you're working on. What is the one you just mentioned? Is that a film?
The Land of No Return. That's a feature film. Uh-huh. Jake Gyllenhaal, Colin Farrell. Amy Adams, Christopher Walken,
top of the crop.
Kathy Bates, yeah,
right.
Again.
So you
have the right attachments.
Yeah, there you go. So are you the producer, executive producer?
I'm the executive producer.
Right. So you put it all together, pretty much.
I'm the last line of defense,
right,
so to speak.
The buck stops here.
Right. There's nobody to go above.
Right.
Right. So when the decisions come finally down, it would be me.
Right. Absolutely. So you're the boss of the project, pretty
much.
Right, right.
I'm not the writer.
Right.
Sometimes projects come to me, movies, television shows, whatnot, and they say, okay, well, we need distribution, because there's a catch-22 in the business where they say, okay, for your feature film, you're going to need distribution. And this is the funder saying this, and they say, you're going to need distribution for we to even consider your funding your film. And then the distribution company says, well, you're going to need funding before we consider distribution for your
film.
Oh,
wow, so it is a catch-22.
However, I just happen to have connections with presidents of companies, of distribution companies, that I make a phone call and I get distribution.
Wow.
Only because it has to fit a certain business model.
Right. So you become very valuable to your clients
right.
that way.
Right. So then I automatically become the executive producer and I control the interests.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sounds good. So when is this film going to come out?
It's supposed to go into production this year.
Uh-huh.
There was a delay for last year because of, again, casting. That's usually where your delays come in. The negotiation for them and all their SAG contracts and so on. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you've had to learn it not in school, but you learned it on your flesh, on your own flesh, hitting the streets and really getting your feet wet in this and find making a place for yourself.
Right, right. To get distribution, the very first one, they said, well, we're not even getting an appointment. We don't get meetings. Nobody's returning our calls. Nobody returns an email. And I said, okay. So I went over to Lionsgate over in Santa Monica. I literally went to the office, and I looked at the board, you know, where they have like a directory of who's working there and what offices they're in. And I looked at the top of the line, right? And I looked at the top of presidents, you know. And I went out of the lobby. I opened up my cell phone. I called that office. I said, I need a meeting to talk about this film. They said, oh, okay. And I went, okay, I wonder how far they're gonna do the research after I get off the phone and find out who the heck is this guy, right?
Yeah.
And 10 minutes later, I got the call from the president and said, yeah, let's talk about your project.
Wow,
and
amazing.
I went, wait a second. I thought this was supposed to be hard.
Right.
It's most of the time, it's because people don't actually try other things. They keep trying the same avenues.
Right.
You know, George Marciano, the founder of Guess, he taught me a lot. He said, you know, when I first came here, I came here with $5,000. I didn't have anything. I'm not a sewer. I just designed things, right? He sold ties back in France. And he said, I had this great design, and I couldn't get meetings. I couldn't get anybody to respond to mail or anything. Nobody would take my calls, anything. So what he did was he got a couple of sewers, and he took some of that $5,000 and he got them to make 12 pairs of jeans, and he sent them to certain departments. And then they open up and said, hey, yeah, let's talk. These are nice jeans. Because he did not go the traditional route.
Right.
If the traditional route, there's a dead end,
right,
you might want to try something new.
Exactly. And probably everybody tries the traditional route, you know. So it's, you know, there's just everybody's there. And then you kind of come out of left field and you do it your way.
Right, right.
You know, and it works. I mean, there's a lot to learn from you, you know. I mean, don't you think, Mia? I mean, the guy's been through a lot, very smart and everything.
Amazing story.
Yeah, and you know what you're doing, you know. So now, a talent agency, tell us a little bit about that. You told us about the publicity side, but what's a talent agent?
Well, I'm not an agent. Let's make that clear for the law.
Okay.
Because an agency in California requires a $50,000 bond to be held in state of California.
Okay.
I'm a talent management, or so manager of talent.
Okay? I see.
So a manager is quite different from an agent. An agent has this huge database of clients, right? They get 10% of a cut for every single booking that they get, right?
Right.
Whether they got that for them or not.
Oh, really?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's great, but they don't really care which one of their database gets that job.
Right.
Right, because they're still going to get the 10%,
that's true,
whether it's from you or for somebody else in that, right? And a lot of times they have the exact same category of person, right? Like, say, for Mia, they have a brunette with, you know, brown eyes. They have the same height, same looks, same schooling, everything, right? So if the other person gets up, they could care less,
right,
because they'll still
right
get paid,
right?
Right? Mm-hmm. A manager, on the other hand, has, if they're a real manager, barely a handful of clients. And none that are in the same category.
Oh, okay. So there's no right conflicts or anything.
Right. Because you're truly right supposed to be managing or giving really great advice for their career development and longevity.
That's true, yeah. Right. And if someone does the same thing as you and they have the same manager, yeah, you start wondering. It's like, whose interest do you have here,
right,
you know?
Right. And
yeah,
to the point of, I even tell my clients where to go get gas.
Really?
Not just for, you know, to be cheap,
right,
right? But to be in the right place at the right time.
Really? Like,
absolutely,
where there's people hanging out and stuff?
Where there's people that are decision makers,
right,
get gas there.
Oh, God.
I tell them where to go get breakfast. I tell them where to shop for groceries, everything.
Really? Absolutely. And that actually works? I mean, what? People will just, like, you'll start striking up conversations in a gas station?
There's a psychological thing where the first part of it, the psychological part where people know by association and they recognize the person because they see them all the time in the same places and they go, I think I know you. Right? Same
right
as a lot of people see me on the street. I go to the Grove a lot because I used to live across the street from there. And paparazzi would literally follow me, taking pictures of me.
Really?
And I would sit there and think, they've got to realize at some point, somebody's going to tell them, you know, he's not famous. Right? However, I look like a lot of different people. Like,
okay,
I've been confused with Hugh Jackman. I've been confused with Aidan Quinn, Sean Penn.
Wow.
All these different people,
yeah,
right?
Oh, wow.
That,
yeah,
by the way, none of them look like each other. It's another oddity. Apparently, I'm a chameleon. And so, and people do that by association of that recognition. And then they say, okay, you know, I have a more comfortable feeling with that person.
Right.
So I must have seen him on another set. So all of a sudden, they have an up on the rest of the crowd that's auditioning.
That's true. So you just right make yourself, you put yourself out there pretty much.
Right.
I mean, you just get seen. That's
right
what you're saying.
It's more than just networking. And network is a very important part of the role that you choose in this career. However, it's also about being in the right place, being seen at those right places.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. So we're speaking with Rod Harrell, who's got the agency. Give us the name again.
RLH Talent, as in my initials, Rod Lee Harrell.
Right.
Talent.com. Yeah.
So from what you were describing, it's not like you're open to dozens of people coming to you and everything, but you are always looking for talent.
You know, a lot of times, and this goes back to me giving back, because again, I came from being very poor. I had to make my own routes.
Right.
I have no problem with giving free advice to the entire general public.
Wow.
They may not be ready for a manager. I tell people all the time, you can't afford me. your income right now in entertainment bookings is not enough to be able to, you know, you get one job for the entire month for $300 and you're going to pay $30 out of that?
Right.
That's ridiculous. It's not good financial advice. And as a manager, I'm supposed to also give you good financial advice.
Right.
So somewhere in there is this conflict. Yeah. So, you know, a lot of times I tell people, like, here's what you really need to do. Once you get those things going and once you start on these steps, then if you decide to come back to me, fine, let's talk.
That's true.
And a lot of times, a lot of people think they need a manager. Sometimes they think they need a publicist.
Right.
I gear them to the right thing, what they actually really need. Sometimes they don't need either.
Right.
And I have no problem with telling people, listen, you're not ready for either. You know, if you've never been seen in anything whatsoever, you don't have any product, you have no credits to your name, you don't need a publicist.
Right.
You need to get to work.
Yeah.
You need to start, you know, applying for some short films or something.
Right.
But yeah, you know, and that's the key is, you know, a lot of people just need a little help in hand to, you know, get the right advice. And a lot of doors are closed in that area.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, right. Everybody's trying to look out for themselves and stuff. So it's very noble that you're willing to do that and everything. Now, so if somebody comes into town, what's the first thing they need to do? Get an agent or is that no?
Yeah, and that's always one of the things that people are told. I don't know who's doing the telling.
The agents probably.
Yeah, probably. Because the key is there are tons and tons of agencies in LA area, right? They go all the way to Pasadena to past Burbank and, you know, God forbid that area. Because you might be going down the wrong road. You know, they don't really need an agent right off. What they need is they need auditions.
Okay.
To get auditions, usually you need actor's breakdowns. Actor's breakdowns, you can actually pay for your own. You don't need an agency to get them.
Okay.
Most people don't understand that or know that. That's the key is to be able to get to auditions. IMDb lets you know of a lot of productions that are going to be going in. It also gives you tons and tons of names in order to submit your headshot and resume.
Wow.
You've got to get jobs. That's what you've got to get.
Yeah, you got to work.
The first thing you do.
I love
when
your
get
attitude, man. Yeah. You know, I can't stand lazy people.
Yeah. Well, obviously, I'm not on the lazy side of life.
No.
The first thing you need to do when you get here is you need to get a job.
Right.
You need to have financial responsibility in your bills. You need to actually have good paying job and the flexibility of that job. That's why, you know, the waiters. You know, people say, oh, all the waiters in L.A. are actors. Well, that would be a good choice.
Right.
If you're at the right restaurant, you could be making some good money.
That's true. And have the flexibility as
Right. Because they're expecting it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's fine. Because now you're paying your bills. You have flexibility to go to auditions. All right. Now, that was the other key. They say, well, I can't, there's not that many roles out there for me. On average in L.A., there's over 6,000 productions every day.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So how are you not finding a role for you?
Yeah.
And no offense to Jack Black, but he's not exactly an attractive young man.
Right.
He found work.
Right. And there's a lot of people. Yeah.
Right?
A lot of
and that's... let's face it, you're more marketable when you're better looking.
Right.
And that's in any job.
Right.
No offense to non-better looking people, but that's just the way
it is.
It's
a reality.
Work on it.
Right.
Right. Work
yeah,
on it.
Exactly.
Go get your teeth fixed, for goodness sake.
Exactly. You don't have to be handsome or beautiful. You just got to put yourself together.
Yeah. Clean up. Don't show up in flip-flops. Don't be chewing gum. Don't have, you know, your sunglasses on inside.
Right.
You know, don't think that you're ready for your rap video. Before you have a rap video.
Right. So all these things, it's just like they don't, it's like common sense, but they don't think about it. You're saying still people commit these offenses.
Right. And this is about how people are brought up.
Right.
A lot of people are not told the right things.
Right.
They're not told, you know, when you go to a job, and this is any job versus the entertainment business, you're supposed to wear a suit.
Right.
You're not supposed to wear shorts and flip-flops. And, you know, I used to be a district manager of a sporting goods company, and people would come in chewing gum, shorts, and I would sit there. the interview's over. You're not being interviewed. Why? What? Are you kidding? Get out of my house. Yeah, what are you doing here?
It's a respect thing, too. You know, it is authority.
Right.
And if you don't have a respect for yourself, you can't respect other people.
Yeah. If you didn't take a bath, if you're still hungover and you still smell like alcohol, I'm sorry. You're not getting the role. you're going to be a hindrance to their E&A, which is the insurance that's required for all these productions. They're going to say, No, I don't think so. It's a liability on set. Thanks.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh,
well, you heard it all here, Rod Harrell. Is there anything you want to promote?
The one book that's coming out, which is Introspection by Regina McKinney. Uh-huh. That is a great book. It's a really good read.
Yeah. Is it a novel?
It's a novel, uh-huh. And most likely this is going to be going into a film, so it would be a good read to get onto now.
Yeah, sounds interesting. Awesome.
Right. And it's available on Amazon.
Well, nice. You're definitely invited back anytime, because I bet we can spend a few more shows with you. And that's rare, you know, with guests and stuff. So, but you're very fascinating, a lot of information, a lot of great stuff, and you seem like a great guy. And, your story definitely deserves a book or something.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
I hear that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I want to hear that about myself, but.
And we didn't even get into the sniper part, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, wow.
I'm the good guy. You want to be on your side.
Yeah, there you go. Rod Harrell, check him out on Twitter, on Facebook. The agency, give us a name again.
RLHtalent.com.
And are you still open to new people and stuff?
Always.
Always. Awesome. Well, this is it, folks. This is your chance to make it big. You heard it here, and you can't get much better advice than that, I think, other than from someone in the industry who's doing that. Thank you, Rod. Thank you, Mia.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll
see you tomorrow.
You have been listening to Sam in the Morning with Mia, which airs every Monday through Friday from 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. If you have a question for the show, or if you'd like to inquire about sponsorship opportunities, please send an email along to sam@latalkradio.com. Sam in the Morning with Mia is a production of LA Talk Radio, where we say what we want.